This is Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, this week, continuing on with the April 26th May Day celebration from 2026, Oregon-WildHorses.org is saving wild horses and working, you know, we're working to save grasslands and rangelands, and we can all live symbiotically with the buffalo and wild horses and stay within Earth's cycles. So boycott Sunnyside mushrooms, the emergency committee for Rojava.org is where you can get information on Rojava, and we can help. Still, there's still a possibility of helping Rojava. Emergency Committee for Rojava.org is where you can get information on Rojava. And so on 2373, like I said, the Lars Larson crowd, already the big money, big timber, big forest is trying to stop Measure 2373, which is the Rights of Nature legislation for Lane County, and which Michelle Holman at Community Rights Lane County, as they said that it would. So what I notice is in these ads, what they're saying is, first of all, they're saying that it's going to increase the danger of fire. So this has absolutely nothing to do with fire. It would take me hours to explain this. And this is the type of things that the opposition propaganda does, is they blow. It's called the big lie. This is from straight out of Nazi Germany. You create this big lie and this panic, and then people vote no on it. So it has absolutely nothing to do with the burning fire in the forest. It does have everything to do with the forest. Then they're also saying there's going to be a bunch of lawsuits. Yes, there probably will be a bunch of lawsuits. And what we're trying to do is, instead of suing you for the cancer and diseases and damage that you cause with your practices on this huge amount of land that you own or control and have a responsibility for to the community because you keep doing things that cause people harm, we keep having to sue you for the harm that you cause. So instead, you're going to have to sue us for the use of that land to make sure that you're using it within the Earth's cycles. And you know, the watershed is basically a living organism that we are a part of, and we have to work within its cycles. So that's what we're saying with this, that the watershed is now going to be treated as a living organism, as the living organism that it is, and not a living organism like a mule that is just whipped into shape, whipped into doing what you want. No, we work within as a stewardship to the watershed. So that's what they're saying. Let me just give you an example from my own past. My father had a GI Bill. He was in World War II, and when he got out, he got they had a loan program or a GI grant or something for small businesses, and he partnered up with some guy that I think he met him in the military. I don't know all the details of this story, but he had a used car lot. And, of course, used car lot and restaurants, the most risky business there is. And, of course, they couldn't make a profit. Guy takes off with the money, his partner. So what my dad told me was, you want to make sure that they have to sue you, not that you have to sue them. You want to make sure they have to spend the money to sue you, especially when you're in the right. And so, yeah, there is going to be a lot of lawsuits, but we have a lot of nonprofits behind 2373 to service those corporate lawsuits that are from corporations that just want to make money off the forest. So, yeah, very important to vote yes on 2373. This is something that can take off across the world and basically turn the world back into the living organism that it is, instead of just the thing that we are to extract from. All right. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Radioforall.net. is where you can get archives of this show. I really thank them for what they do. Oh, and it's nice to know that ceasefire has joined the list of words that seem to have absolutely no meaning in the Trump administration in regards to Gaza and Iran and several other countries that have a marginal air force and huge amounts of resources that can be extracted for weapons sales. And it joins the list of truth, justice, and the American way of words that no longer have any meaning. All right, so I'm here at the May Day Festival, and you can hang out. I'm recording for Low Power FM over here, so if you want to be on the radio, you can speak up too.
Probably not, but right. I have a friend interested in this.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So your booth says Oregon Wild Horse Organization at OregonWildHorse.org. What is it that you guys do?
Well, we are a watchdog organization over the wild horses here in Oregon, as well as nationally across the western United States. And there's a few herds in Oregon, around the eastern Oregon area, that we watch over. And right now, we're focused on the Kigers. The Kigers are in Harney County, and the BLM currently has them slated for real reduction in their numbers, really unnecessarily, and it's mostly to make room for livestock on range.
Well, and so what's the solution? What should we be doing with these horses? Are you trying to find homes for them?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, when the government does round them up, they're putting to holding facilities, and they try to put them up for adoption, and there's not many that do get adopted. A lot end up in long-term holding, and it's basically like a private ranch or like a feedlot, and they just spend the rest of their lives in there, which is not natural, and they're away from their family and normal behavior for a horse, you know, and that's on the taxpayer dollar. We're spending millions of dollars to do that when it virtually costs nothing to just leave them on the range. But it's really, it's a livestock industry that wants that land where the horses are grazing. They want that forage for their cattle, which is also subsidized by the taxpayer. It's very low cost to put a cow on the range versus in their own private land. So,
right, and this is public land that they want
to
put it on.
This is public land.
This is the ones that you and I own.
Yes, yes, we're paying for this.
And so what do they do with the horses when they kill them without being too macabre? What is that like?
Well, it's actually illegal to send wild horses to slaughter, but it does happen. And it's illegal to slaughter horses in the U.S., so they get put on trucks to go to Mexico or Canada, which are really long, torturous trips for them. And there's not really any standards in those countries that's humane, so it's a very horrific process for the horses. And then they end up as either, you know, some of it goes for human consumption, a lot go to, like, you know, pet food and stuff like that.
So at least it's not wasted, though. They don't just dump them in a bury them in the ground. At least they use them for something.
Right, I mean, if you want to say that.
Well, but also, it sounds like they just pack them into trucks with no regulations, too. There's no regulations as how many horses are in a truck.
Well, if there are, it's very, very little regulation and not enforced.
All right, and so what about the solution, it sounds to me like, you know, there's a movement to return to the Great Plains and to have these contiguous spaces that are all put together and everything where, what do you call it, wildlife corridors.
Yes.
So is that the solution? Is there a way to work with people that do livestock?
Well, we have tried to work with people with livestock, and some do, you know, help with the horses. But there's a lot, like, it's not these small family farms like they make it out to be. It's the corporations, these large corporations who are already, like, millionaires, you know, like Koch Brothers and Simpson. And, you know, there's a few out there that just want the land for themselves. They don't want to share it, really.
Right, and so these are factory farming. These aren't family farms. These
right.
are factory farms. They're
yeah.
a huge acreage.
Yeah, and the land that the horses are on, there's, it's called HMAs, Herd Management Areas, and these were designated for the wild horses back in 1971 with the Wild Horse and Burro Act. And they were supposed to be managed for, you know, so they could live freely there and thrive within the ecosystem and not be bothered, not be harassed. but over the years that law's been chipped away at. You know, they find loopholes to it and stuff, and the government agencies are bowing to the industries, you know, doing what the industry wants, so they find ways to skirt the regulations and get away with what they're doing.
Right, and then I lived in Nevada, and there's a bunch of Mustangs in Nevada, right?
Is that right, yeah, there's a lot in Nevada, yes.
Familiar with that, and then I was working with this guy at Amazon and briefly, and he had this mule that he would go out in the field, and this mule knew him and would come and run to him. I mean, horses and these animals are intelligent, right? They have they have a lot of personality. These aren't just machines.
No. They're very sentient, intelligent, very emotional-based beings, and they have families. I mean, in their herds, they have like a larger herd, and then they can break off into smaller bands. But they have, you know, a stallion with their mares, and they raise a family together. They're tightly bonded. They form lifetime bonds with each other. So,
and they've kind of adopted humans, kind of as a symbiotic relationship with humans, sort of in a good way.
Yes,
we're kind of being irresponsible to them.
Yes, a lot.
Yeah, and what about you? Do you own a horse?
I do. I've had horses all my life, and a couple years ago, I adopted one of the Mustangs that got removed, and she's around 10 years old, and so she's been out in the wild most, you know, her whole life, 10 years, and so to bring her into a domestic situation is very traumatic for her. And it's taken quite a while for her to acclimate and get used to humans, and I'm still in the early processes of her gentling. But they come back from, you know, being rounded up. They chase them with helicopters into these pens, and that's traumatic for them. And then they're put in the holding facilities, and they are seeing humans for the first time, and they're getting branded and, you know, poked and prodded and stuff. And so it takes a long time for them to finally kind of heal, you know, from that experience.
So adoption isn't really the way to go. We want to leave them in the
yeah, that would be the best case scenario. Yes.
And what about the buffalo? Anything, you know, there's the buffalo. They want to do the same thing with the buffalo.
So yeah, we support that for sure.
Be in conjunction with that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much. Did you want to give your name?
My name's Tanea Jewell, and I live here in the Eugene area. And I've been doing this for quite a while now.
All right, it's OregonWildHorses.org.
Yes.
All right, is there any legislation that we need to look at?
Well, there is some...
Or what can people do?
There is some legislation in Congress, one's called the SAFE Act, and that would close the loopholes to slaughter. So the ones that squeeze through the loopholes, you know, to go to Mexico or Canada, this would ban the transport of equines over the border, specifically for slaughter. So if that passes, that will help solve a lot of the wild horse problems where people want to remove them just so they can, like, sell them and make money off of them and stuff. So, and it's also for domestic equines. A lot of domestic equines, once they're used up or they've made as much money as they can and, you know, they're older or injured or whatever, they get dumped at slaughter, and we're trying to make it so people are more responsible, you know, caring for the horse for the rest of their lives, not just like throwing them away.
All right, but so allies would be anybody that's into the Great Plains, restoration of the Great Plains, rewilding, all this stuff would be advantageous to horses.
Yeah, we would love to have alliance with other organizations. Right now it's kind of hard to do that because the BLM's very good at putting out propaganda against the wild horses, and even environmentalists, a lot of them buy into that propaganda that they're destroying the land or they're overpopulated or whatever, which a lot of that is lies put out by the government.
Because they're actually good for the grasslands.
Yeah,
there's a whole movement of biodynamic farming that they're using cattle in small herds to maintain the grasslands in the Great Plains.
Well, wild horses have been here. I mean, horses started out in North America, you know, like 50 million years ago, and they evolved for millions of years here. So they're really well adapted to the ecosystems, and they're like considered a keystone species by us and, you know, people who really, really know what's going on the land, you know. And but the common narrative with the BLM is that they're invasive and feral, which is not true at all.
So, see, yeah. I thought horses were brought over from Spain. So
some were, but there were still some here.
Native here, okay.
Yeah, the Native Americans had them forever, you know, so, yeah.
Okay. All right, thanks very much. Thank you for your great work.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes.
Cool. We have one more song for y'all. It has been awesome playing here. We love it. Yay! Awesome. Hooray. Yeah, I think there's speeches. Yes. Speeches. Yeah. Heck yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you guys so much for the big scare. Enjoy the rest of your beautiful May Day.
Corn for generations. And the corn was not a product. It was alive and it had a name. But then came NAFTA. The cheap GMO American corn, subsidized by the United States government, flooded Mexico and the price of our corn collapsed. Farmers who had fed their communities for generations could not compete with the price that was never honest, never real, and so many of us had to leave our home country. The land didn't fail us, but the system did. We left, not because we wanted to, because we loved our home, but we had no choice. And I want you to understand that clearly, because I didn't come here to leave where I was coming from. I came here because the same system that uses my labor today made it impossible to survive on the land my grandparents worked. And then that same system turned around and called me illegal. I want to tell you about a concept that was part of my childhood, something special to me, and that I'm going to share with you today. It is called tequio. And tequio comes from the Nahuatl word tequit, which means work, but not work like a job, not work that you sell. It was communal work, done freely, done together for the good of everyone. Kind of like today. Here is what it looked like when I grew up. The community would announce a day, and the road needed a repair, the canal was clogged, the school needed a new wall, and on that day before sunrise, people came with their tools, with their hands, with food their families had packed to share, not because there was a paycheck waiting. Not because anyone was watching, because the community needed it. And they were a part of that community, and that was enough. There was not an order to it. An elder would arrive before everybody, always. And it wasn't to supervise. It was to set the tone, to remind everyone without words that this work was older than any of us. The youngest watched the oldest and learned not just how to lay stone or clear some brush, but what it meant to give something to a place. To understand that you are not just passing through, that you belong to it, and it belongs to you. And the food, people would arrive with clay pots, tortillas still warm from the fire, beans slow cooked with epazote, tortillas that were made that morning, and you ate together in the dirt with your hands dirty. And it was the best meal that week, that event. Not because of what was in the pot, because of the community that surrounded it. People built something together. Nobody was doing anybody a favor, and there was no charity in it. It was the people who understood that the things that hold life together cannot be bought. They have built together over and over again by the people who live there for generations before anyone told us that the market was the only way to organize human life. We were organizing differently. Desde abajo, from below, from the ground, one day of collective work at a time. NAFTA did not just destroy our corn. It replaced mutual obligation with profit. And this destruction and way of life forced many of us into cities, across borders, into fields, in kitchens and warehouses in a country that needed our work and demonized our presence at the same time. So here I am standing with you, preparing for May 1st. And I need you to hear me. I need you to sacrifice. I need you to act. And I need you to practice tequio. In order to disrupt this system, we need to come together and withdraw our labor. The economy cannot function without us, and it is time we acted like we know it. The hotels, the hospitals, the harvest, and the warehouses, we are the ones who move everything. And when we stop, they feel it. This is not symbolic, it is power, and we have always had it. When we shut down on May 1st, we're doing something the system says cannot be done. We're saying things matter more than business as usual. We are saying to our immigrant neighbors, your fear is my fear. We are saying to the families in Gaza, Iran, Lebanon, your child is my child. And we say to our trans neighbors, your life is my life. That is tequio. I watched my grandmother pack food to share at a communal workday like it was the most natural thing in the world. People with very little building something together because the community needed it. No hesitation. You showed up, and that is just what you did. On May 1st, we need to show up. We do not go to work. We do not spend. We stand together in the streets, and we make visible what they need us to keep invisible. That this economy runs on us. And we are done pretending otherwise. Otro mundo es posible. Another world is possible. And not because someone gave it to us, but because we built it. Right. It is our duty. It is our right. Strike, strike, strike. It is our duty. It is our right. Strike, 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 strike. It is our duty. It is our right. Strike, 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 strike. Thank you. Gracias.
Folks, can we give it up for Latife? Woo!
This is KEPW LP 97.3 FM Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Support independent media.
Direct from our newsroom in New York, it's the Channel 1 Evening News with Robert Elgin and Leo Batfish in Suckmuck Dick, Thurston Thithertinton in Bath, Mechanica Mechanica in Washington, D.C., Freddie Fagel in Minneapolis, and Lionel Elgin in New York.
Good evening. Enemy sappers attacked Allied supply bases in Long Wang earlier today. Casualties were reported high in the Gulf of Kaki and in Nirpakyu, where enemy helicopters were downed by rock-throwing peasant women. General Chow, commander of Allied forces in Long Wang, divided his troops into two columns and ordered three units from Column A and two units from Column B into ground fighting there. American troops were on hand, and here with a report is Leo Batfish in Suckmuck Dick.
These are the proud and plucky fighting men of the screaming 103rd Airborne Cavalry, secretly stationed here in Long Wang to support and destroy in this protective overreaction mission known as Operation Bloodbath. These battle-hardened, shell-shocked elite corps has covertly hauled heavy artillery through rice paddies, cow paddies, jungles, and swamps, moving under cover of darkness to avoid being accidentally bombed by stray B-52s. The Screaming 103rd is part of the Terminal Pacification Program, initiated by an unknown sonographer at the Pentagon in 1968. And so, for these men, war or no war, enemy or no enemy, this dreadful, dreary, drab, draconian drama drags on. This is Leo Batfish in Suckmuck Dick.
The Russians' new space program got off to an inauspicious start today, apparently due to a gas leak aboard the giant Scratchenich 3 rocket. Here, via satellite, is a taped report from Thurston Thithertinton in Bath.
The Soviet Union today launched a Scratchenich 3 rocket with one Russian cosmonaut aboard. Soon after takeoff, the trouble began. Director of the mission, Vladimir Getcharoksov, alerted the flight commander, Yuri Vosnovsky, of a dangerous amyl nitrate leak into the rocket's fresh air and cooling system. Apparently dazed by the noxious chemical, Commander Vosnovsky disregarded orders and, donning his spacesuit, jumped out of the giant spacecraft. Narrowly escaping doom with the aid of his British-built jet-propelled rocket pack, the berserk Russian spaceman, apparently enraged by the technical malfunctions plaguing the Soviet space program, launched a one-man assault on the mission control headquarters. In a typically Russian display of pique, Vosnovsky fought for several minutes with scientists involved in the ill-fated launching. Alexei Rudnakny, an authority on solar wind and former Olympic discus thrower, finally overcame cosmonaut Vosnovsky by driving him into the atomic pile. His present condition is unknown. Meanwhile, the abandoned rocket on a collision course for St. Peter's Basilica in Rome was detonated. This is Thurston Fisterton in Bath.
Make the world a little bit better. At Uranus, we're just beginning to find out.
The president went to the airwaves this evening in a televised address to the nation. Commenting upon the spirit of dissent abroad in the land, the president reaffirmed his confidence in the basic strength of the American people.
I'm in the driver's seat. I run the show. I'm the president.
Earlier in the day, the president welcomed the Prime Minister of India, Mrs. Mahatma Yanta. Mechanica Mechanica reports from the nation's capital.
After a day spent in consultation with the Prime Minister and her aides, the president took the demure world leader on an informal tour of the White House Rose Garden. Later, they spoke to reporters.
I would like to thank the marvelous people of the United States for the great reception they showed me here, and of course the hospitality of your great president. Thank you.
Thank you. Isn't she terrific? I mean, this woman is the head of a country with thousands of starving people, and she herself, as you can see, look at this. She's not starving. This takes imagination. This takes courage. And that is it. That's it. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. You're wonderful. You know that? You're really something. I'm really going to take you. You're really going to like America. America's going to be your favorite country. I'll say that.
The assassination attempt in the Rose Garden was the 23rd such incident since the president took office, and the second in the last 5 days.
Thank you. Thank you. United Farm Workers has launched its first boycott campaign since 2005, calling on consumers to avoid Windmill Mushroom Farm. The boycott was announced in December after Windmill and former owner Ostrom refused to recognize the union, retaliated against pro-union workers, and violated terms of a federal program that allows farms to bring in temporary foreign workers. Workers at the farm have been organizing since 2020. In 2023, Ostrom agreed to pay $3.4 million to resolve a lawsuit filed by the Washington State Attorney General the prior year. Ostrom had fired female and Washington-based workers and replaced them with male foreign workers hired through the H-2A visa program for temporary agricultural workers in violation of anti-discrimination laws. While the lawsuit was pending, Ostrom sold the mushroom farm to Windmill. Like Ostrom, Windmill has refused to recognize the Farm Workers Union. UFW President Teresa Romero said in a press release that the boycott would continue until the company agrees to recognize the union. Since Windmill took over, dozens of pro-union workers have been fired, UFW spokesperson Antonio De Loria Brust told the Labor Press. UFW believes the farm currently employs around 150 workers. The National Labor Relations Act, the federal law that protects private sector workers' rights to organize and requires employers to bargain, specifically excludes agricultural workers. Oregon, Washington, and a dozen other states allow collective bargaining for agricultural workers, but don't require employers to bargain with the union or face legal consequences for retaliating against pro-union workers. Windmill Farms mushrooms are sold under the Windmill label in grocery stores around the Pacific Northwest. The farm also grows mushrooms that are sold under store labels, so they don't show the Windmill Farms label. But UFW said Windmill is the only mushroom plant in the Sunnyside, Washington area, so consumers should avoid purchasing any mushrooms labeled as being produced in Sunnyside.